Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, and today I am feeling on top of the world because I just killed a wasp by myself in my very own home and I didn't die. This thing was huge, easily an inch long from antenna to thorax or whatever the ass end of it is called. It was just me, my fear, my adrenaline, about 18 paper towels and a quick reflex, boom, roasted, just bam, got that little bitch right on the window. I am feeling so alive at this moment. But besides tales of me killing the world's largest and most venomous wasp, I also have 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 Day recap, as well as Unexpected and Married at First Sight. Coming up this week on Patreon, don't mean to brag, but I'm going to, I have an incredible guest lined up. On a previous Patreon episode, oh boy, probably in the first 10 or 15 of them, I think we're a little over 40 now, I told you all about this visit I had to a Reiki, Reiki healer, Reiki person, and this woman who speaks to angels that I found through a really weird series of events, but I am a skeptic with this kind of stuff. So when I tell you that she blew my mind, I am being completely honest. Well, we've kept in touch and I reached out to her and she agreed to humor me. Let me ask her all kinds of things that I've been noticing in my own personal life that really have me weirded out. I want your questions for her too, or comments, concerns. So I'm going to put a post in our Patreon-only Facebook group and just throw anything at me and I will ask her anything that I think that she may be able to answer. If you are not on Patreon or you want to be part of this group, head on over to patreon.com/realitytvpod. You'll see the different levels of perks starting at just $1 a month. Most of you are at the $5 level. It gets you a whole bunch of perks, all the previously posted bonus episodes and all the future ones as well, and so much more. So head on over there, check it out, and Instagram and Twitter at Reality TV Pod. And of course, let's talk in the Facebook group, Reality TV Orchard of Snark. Okay, let's get into 90 Day Fiancé because this was a really meaty episode. No pun intended, but it is a pretty good pun because there was some funky looking meats this week. So let's start with Michael and Angela first. Michael is taking Angela down this really weird back alley to a restaurant that Angela thinks is beautiful. I thought she was going to snap walking in there because it was either her mood or the plastic chairs that looked about 10 years old that are just, they're on their last leg. They've been baking daily in that African sun. I was just crossing my fingers that she didn't twist or turn in that chair because we've all been there. We've all had that fear where you go to a barbecue, you go to someone's house in the backyard and you're looking at that plastic chair like, oh shit, I'm going to have to go sit in it. And that thing looks faded and crunchy. But she sits down and thank God that thing doesn't break. I'm not dissing her. It's not a weight shaming thing. It's an I've been there kind of thing. But there's bigger things to worry about besides this chair, like the cow leg delivered in a hoof. Yes, a hoof. Hoof, hoof. This is going to be the new sneaker slash gym shoe debate that I'm going to bring up later. Is it hoof or is it hoof? Let's talk about it. But anyway, Angela is she's quite a trooper. I got to tell you that because if someone put that thing in front of me, I absolutely would have pulled a Nicole or a goddamn it, Larry, and not eating it. This wasn't just, you know, a piece of pork or maybe a couscous dish that didn't look that good. This was just a leg cut off an animal baked in the oven as is. This wasn't butchered properly. This wasn't seasoned or marinated or slow cooked. That was some bullshit that Michael set her up to right there. Okay, now the purpose of this dinner isn't all cow hooves, hooves, and prayers to the plastic gods of that chair. Angela wants to know if Michael will wipe her ass. Yep, that's right. Michael, will you wipe my butt? In that moment, I saw algorithms and formulas swimming above Michael's head. He's wondering himself in that moment, like, let me think about that. What are the advantages to wiping Angela's butt? Is our weekly trip to the Walmart together and debt at the pawn shop worth the wipe? Well, Michael, what's your answer? With his sweet little face and a little baby talk, he manages to squirm his way out of it without answering it. It works for Angela, which begs the question, Angela, for being someone who can call bullshit when you see it, how can you be this stupid? Especially when they start talking about the baby. This guy clearly wants to have children. He doesn't want to be with you long term. Angela is like, oh, no, you know, it's just artificial insemination. He doesn't know how it works. No, girl, you don't know how it works. If you don't have eggs anymore, a baby isn't just gonna grow from his sperm. But you know, Michael, he's not that stupid either. He's just thinking, I'm not telling Angela I'm worried about not being able to have kids with her because I'm just gonna dump her ass after I wipe it and find a fertile woman to bear my spawn. But then all of this talk about menopause and fertility somehow got Angela all hot and bothered because she tells Michael to hurry up and eat because she wants to have sex. To which he cringes with the same level of disgust that I know we all had. How much you want to bet that he ordered another course, another round of hooves, and a dessert to try to delay that departure? He is not having as fun in the bedroom as Angela is having. So let's fast forward to Angela walking through town. It's looking like she maybe had like liquid fire shits, like the Real Housewives of New York or something, because she's like stumbling through, looks like there's some pain involved. And she asks, so this is a village? Yes, Angela, it's a village. What else could it be? A metropolis that just, you know, took down its skyscrapers for the day? But never mind the obvious, because Angela's got some concerns over something that she found on Michael's phone while he was probably taking a dump in the hotel room. Turns out he has the Instagram app, and what do you know, when Angela clicked right into it, she found that he was following 1,000 women, and she's worried that he's communicating with them or, okay, I can talk about diarrhea and liquid shits, but I can't say the M word because, you know, 8 years of Catholic school. But Angela is a fool if she thinks any guy, not even just Michael, is going to be like, no, I'm not M-wording. I'm all good, Angela. I got you. Forget that naked, whoever the hell is the hot chick right now. I don't know. I want to say like Elle McPherson or Cindy Crawford. That shows you how old I am. You get the idea. I mean, you can see the red flags that Angela is seeing. Like, you can see it in her face, but she's choosing to look past them. And you know she's going to be kicking herself and smoking herself into an early grave because of this very moment that we are watching right here. She's going to say, I should have known, because Michael is using her. It's so blatant. It's so obvious. He's not even really trying that hard to hide it. So later at the pool, Angela calls her daughter Scotty because she's confused about Michael and the 1,000 plus women he finds more attractive and interesting than her. And Scotty becomes, you know it, our voice of reason. She is screaming the obvious at Angela, but it was fun to watch. And what I enjoyed the most about this scene was not so much what Scotty said, but what Angela was wearing. That necklace, that massive black beaded, I think it was like a semi-precious stone-shaped pendant. I'd say it was maybe, oh, I don't know, 4 to 5 inches in length, and it is in the shape of the continent of Africa. Yeah, because nothing says, I'm not a tourist here, than a novelty-sized necklace in the shape of the continent that you happen to be visiting. It was amazing. Now, next week with these two, we find out that there's some other secret that Michael and Angela have been keeping, but something Michael's done. Now, Angela does not hold back very much, so it must be pretty bad, and I cannot wait for it. Now, we had kind of a fun couple to watch, and now we're going to go quickly through the snooze fest that was Rachel and John. They're just living their fairy tale in England. They're so in love, and Rachel hopes John's going to propose. Gee, I wonder if he's going to. But there happens to be a huge glitch in the plans, and that is, the tiny fact they can't live together. She can't live in England because she has another daughter who she shares custody of. And John can't come to the States because his visa won't be granted because of that, criminal record, including 50 to 60 altercations. Now, there's another reason why Rachel's concerned about John, and that's because her father doesn't trust him yet because they haven't all met together. But Rachel's got an idea for that. The same way she met John, little FaceTiming session, minus the karaoke, which I'm starting to be a little disappointed by. I think that we are owed some sort of a horrible duet at this point. My personal preference would be Angel of the Morning, but I would take a Captain and Tennille. I mean, I'll take anything at this point. Mamma Mia, if I'm really going to be, expecting a lot. But anyway, Rachel rings up Pops and she wants John to explain himself so that her dad feels reassured. Long story short, the dad says he respects him and vice versa. I mean, I'm basically taking naps during these scenes, like baby Lucy in the backseat these days, because there's just nothing to get excited about with these two. So at the end of the episode, they go to King Arthur's castle, they get to this cliff, John proposes, but something didn't sit right with me. It didn't seem sincere. I feel like if this were the true first proposal, Rachel would have been staring at that ring a little longer. She'd be acting a little bit more excited. She just looks like she's been wearing that ring before. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like, not that the ring is everything, but come on, when you get engaged, you look at the ring, you're like, oh my God, then you hug. And it was anticlimactic. I don't think it was the first or the original proposal. That was all for the cameras. And there's no convincing me otherwise. Okay, let's move on to Ricky and Ximena. Every time Ricky's scenes come on, I crack up because they start playing this Latino music, and I freaking love it. My sister can tell you, I have this love of Latin music. Yeah, I know I'm like Polish through and through, but the Latin music speaks to me, especially, that like Juan Telenovela, is that the name of the song? I love it. It gets me moving in ways I don't want anyone to see me move. And Spanish telenovelas, my favorite one being Preciosa, had the best music in it. I watched this telenovela, Preciosa, religiously when I went to visit my sister in Costa Rica. She was living there at the time. And there was this theme song, which was nothing short of incredible. And I'm going to treat you to it right now. It went a little something like this. Juntos nos vamos, cuando sueños nos vamos. Now, the wording may not be totally accurate, but it spoke to me in ways that still stick with me some 15 years later. And for that, gracias, preciosa y pantera. Okay. If you watched it, you will totally appreciate that Pantera reference. But back to Ricky, who is staying in the exact same apartment complex that was used to shoot Narcos. And I'm not kidding. I went back and I compared the scenes. And I'm telling you, it's the exact same exterior that they had on in Narcos. I'm assuming, you can tell that I feel like really confident that I know this, that it's probably just one of those few places in Medellin that grants filming permits. So anyway, there's Ricky, freshly laid and feeling confident. He is just easy breezy, gonna call Ximena the wrong girl. Yeah, he called the girl he's known 2 minutes the name of the other girl who he only got to see for 2 minutes. What a jerk. Ricky, you are horrible. Now, I don't know if Ximena is that desperate or if she's just that hard up to get to the States that she doesn't care too much after that. I like her because she's cute. I think her hair is a little bit too dark, but I trust her because her eyebrows are not too crazy. We've had this discussion about the eyebrow journeys. Turns out Ricky likes her too because he says he's actually falling in love with her already. He may not have sounded sincere about caring about his daughters and building a friendship and stuff. I respected that, but I think she's moving too quickly, just as Ricky is. These two, they got some sort of relationship or clinger issues. I don't like the combined desperation level between the two of them. So we fast forward to the two shopping later, and that is when Ricky fills us in on this dynamic of the relationship that he hadn't disclosed to us before. You see, Jimena was hinting around that she needed money, and Ricky is now feeling like maybe she was using him. What? What would make you think that, Ricky? Okay, well, it gets better. During the time they were communicating, which is approximately 2 weeks according to some of the math I've done, he sent her between $1,000 and $1,500. Yeah. Ricky, how about you spend that money on, you know, your two daughters, maybe save it for their college if you got some extra money that you don't know what to do with? So this begs the question, what or how much money did he send Melissa? Think about that. They were communicating for much longer, and based on the amount of metal in that girl's mouth, she's been getting some funds from Ricky as well. Now, Ricky's also getting suspicious because he found out that Jimena got a nose job, and he's getting kind of annoyed about this. But I'm getting curious because if she got a nose job for only $1,000, $1,500, what the hell has taken me so long to get my ass down to Medellin? I had sinus surgery myself for a legitimate deviated septum in college, and I literally begged the surgeon to just shave a little off the top as long as he was in there, but he refused. I mean, what the fuck? All this time, $1,000 has held me away from living my best life with my best nose. What the hell is going on? But back to the cliff where I'm still wondering what the hell they ate that looked like a little mini taquito. I'm wondering, is it sweet? Is it savory? But anyway, Ricky confronts Jimena on this nose surgery and what she spent his money on. Now, she answers that she did have insurance and she paid the remainder balance of it to have her nose fixed because she broke it in college. Been there, girl. I get it. Now, then she says she used Ricky's money for a little vacation to visit her sister and gifts for her nephews. Now, Ricky seems like he's relieved about it, like, oh, okay. But is it just me, or would you have been more upset? I mean, she just told you that you bought her nephews some little nifty gifties, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. I would have been more upset if it would have went to your plastic surgery. It just, it made no sense. Either way, she took your money, man, right? Does it matter what she spent it on? But you see, Ricky says it's because it's just that he's all about honesty and integrity. That's what's at the heart of it. You know, the same thing that he had when he was communicating with two women at once and sending money overseas and calling women he's sleeping with by the wrong name. I'm starting to see why Ricky sucks at relationships and maybe even sucks at life. I'm getting a George vibe here, which, by the way, a little side tangent, as always, did you know that George was sentenced this week? It's something like 22 to 36 months in prison. So, yeah, good luck with that one on FISA. I'd start looking for some alternates if I were you. But anyway, back to Ricky. I'm getting a George vibe, a pathological liar, maybe some David Firehouse guy, you know who I'm talking about, David and Annie, just that lie in the moment to get yourself through the moment and then you'll figure it out later. Ricky is right along with those two. Now, speaking of telling the truth or lack thereof, Ricky now wants to tell Jimena the truth about Melissa. So two mojitos, a few spins on the dance floor with his fanny pack, and Ricky wants to come clean about Melissa and his real intention of going to Columbia in the first place. So he sits Jimena down, and then he flubs. He lies again and says he talked to his ex to talk about his daughter. He hopes she's okay with that. Ew, Ricky sucks. Total George, total David, says what he needs to say in the moment, and then he's just going to lie, and then ask to apologize to her later. Well, guess who's never, ever going to apologize? Jesse frickin' Von Trapp. Now, Jesse and Darcy are always preceded by some Fright Night music.
You gotta cut it on the bias, babe. It keeps it juicy.
Well, Jesse is about to hulk out of his turd brown ice skating costume right there on the front porch of this Airbnb. Whatever poly blend he is wearing, I kind of need to know, because that support and that lift that he had on his chest in that outfit, it's something I've been looking for in a swimsuit since probably 97. But Darcy's daughters are, oh God, victims in all of this. They are both so over their mom and Jesse. Like, can this guy just go back to the Von Trapp family and you go back to the condo with Auntie Stace and we can go back with our dad with giant features? Word on the street, by the way, is that Darcy doesn't even live with her daughters, which is why they had to rent that Airbnb. Again, I don't know this for sure. That's just what I've seen. But their daughters live with the dad. And when I say that he has large features, you gotta see this guy. The only way I can describe him is like a Botox version of the dad on Blossom. Remember him? And then like that giant oversized Ken doll looking guy. What's his name? Frederick on Million Dollar Bravo Apartment, whatever. Okay, clearly Darcy's got a type. Now back to the house where there's soon to be like a Dateline Keith Morrison. Can't you just see him like moseying his way down that front porch, showing us where Jesse headbutted Darcy in a double homicide? Maybe it got a little too dark there, but maybe it's just that you can't handle the truth. So little Darcy, the little mini Darcy, the youngest daughter, goes and gets Jesse. I mean, shit, she's got some major balls. And he comes in saying to Darcy, "I'm not talking to you, Darcy. I'm here for the kids." Okay, Mr. Mom. I mean, he's known them, what, 27 minutes? And Jesse just shows what a freaking gaslighter he is. Can you even imagine him as a teenager himself? Just the way he just... ugh, it's like that screwdriver just sticks it in and turns. He just knows how to keep something going. I mean, it's no wonder his mom, isn't he an only child? I mean, his poor mother, that's probably why she turned to like dream catchers and pot and men who could be cult leaders. Like, she just needed to get away from the psychotic youth that she had militarizing her home. So back from a commercial break, and it's like full-on cops mode, right? Jesse's pouting that Darcy stepped on his, they looked like New Balances, and Darcy's explaining that wood floors apparently make her big toe cold or some shit. I don't believe for a second that Darcy threw a shoe at his head. I think she did toss them at his general direction or towards his body. But I also don't believe she needed to just warm her little tootsies up, so she was going to throw on some of his gym shoes. And yes, I said gym shoes. We're going to have this debate. That's what we call them here, folks, okay? We call them gym shoes. Sneakers? No. It's not 1973. We don't call them sneakers anymore. Yeah, I know. This is going to be like the biggest debate in the Facebook group, just like it was when we talked about this on Moms on the Rocks. But anyway, Darcy stepped on his gym shoe, and then she threw her Louboutin by Payless towards Jesse. That's what happened. End of story. Now, all of a sudden, we have Von Trapp versus House of 11 in the court docket because these two love to play it up. Jesse storms out of there saying he's been assaulted and he feels unsafe. I wish it had the charm of Tammy Roman versus David. It wasn't not funny. And, you know, we had Beth trying to make a rape case and John Brennan wishing Irene was there instead of on her honeymoon because he misses his mommy. That's a reference to Real World Season 2 for those of you who were born in the 90s, you little babies. True story. But yeah, so let's get to the true story. This is dangerous. I would not be sitting here if I had that Louboutin in my eye. If I didn't dodge it, it could have happened. That was the best part of the whole episode. If I didn't dodge it, it could have happened. Okay, Jesse, take it down a notch. You've been in the military. You have seen some things. And if a generic Louboutin shoe is giving you post-traumatic stress disorder, you're getting flashbacks, you are even worse of a person than we already thought. So then this douche goes on to say that he needs security around him. Yeah, but he forgets that he isn't in his best light as he is, you know, going on his, I want to say soliloquy because it sounds really smart and fancy, as he's going on his tangent. We'll leave it there because that's more Jody-ish. Now, what I noticed as he's standing outside in natural daylight is that his complexion and his forehead don't say that he's 24. I don't believe that anymore. He is 30-something. I refuse to believe he's even in his 20s. There is no freaking way. I think he's got some, maybe some Mother Gothel shit going on. Like he drinks the wax from his voodoo candles or something and reverses aging or some shit. Because there's no way with those wrinkles in his forehead that he's 24. I don't buy it. He's got a baby face, but everything else, no. Now, actually, speaking of voodoo, I don't know what happened. Maybe he was not going to get his paycheck. But JVP, something happens. He goes back to the house, which at this point needs a very good saging. And he says, love is bringing him back to Darcy. But then it doesn't make sense because he walks in and immediately starts in with the condescending shit again. They sit down for an interview after a couple hours and it's the same stuff again, except this time Jesse musters up a little tear too when Darcy finally is like, yeah, well, whatever. It's his turn to cry. I really don't care. And then Jesse gets pissed and she ruins the moment that he planned to make himself look good on camera and manipulate viewers. So he storms off. It was a disaster. That's when we get these accusations of alcohol problems and him being controlling. It's so fucking stupid because it's repetitive. And then Jesse says, it didn't have to end like this. It didn't have to end like this. God, Jesse, I'm not buying this personal trainer thing. He'd be more believable if he said he wanted to become an actor because he so wants to live this Hollywood B-movie love story popular actor, or actually maybe more like a soap opera actor. I remember back in high school and middle school, I would watch Days of Our Lives and there was, what was his name? Was it John? And he was with Kristen who, wasn't Kristen Eileen Davidson? Okay, maybe I'm getting him confused. But anyway, some guy with wavy, dark black hair used to like smell someone named Kristen's hair. And he'd be like, I will never leave you, Kristen. Very inspirational for Jesse. That is where he is getting all of his lines from. Okay, now let's go on to Paul and Karini. They're not as bad as John and Rachel. They're like a mix of John and Rachel and Darcy. It's very tiring. Again, it's repetitive, but let's just do this. We meet up with Karini with far too many layers of plaque on her teeth laying in that bed. Don't want to come down on hard with her because she does have to sleep with Paul, but maybe, just maybe, Paul has not only a thing for collecting hair, but maybe he likes plaque because he is all up in her face. He can't get enough of that gingivitis. But Karini suddenly whips out the most English she has ever spoken, clear as day. She says, stop it. Stop it, Paul. She obviously gets a lot of practice using that line. Now, Paul says that Karini is acting tired and sick, but he really doesn't believe her. He just thinks she's trying to postpone the wedding again. Beating a dead horse, but I think it's because she's pregnant, and then they're going to look back and go, oh, it's because she was pregnant. Boring, predictable. Now, I'll tell you something that was not predictable. Paul putting on the most iridescent, sparkly suit I have ever seen. I really, truly did not even know that they made suits like this in real life. There had to have been some other suits to choose from in the suit store, right? And then even the tie. I mean, the thing was just as wide as Paul's body. It was horrible. Now, Karini did look pretty. Her hair was a little greasy, but she looked nice. You know how I feel about red roses and baby's breath, so I will just save it. Her mom actually looked very pretty. Mother Karini seems very sweet. Father Karini looked like he just stepped off the front nine. But I mean, the guy deserves a break, right? My favorite moment was Paul glancing behind him, and Karini's whole family is facing forward, just staring right at him. And God, how I want to have a talk with that younger brother who was just laughing in the background the entire time. And the irony isn't lost on me that they're celebrating the reception on the very same waters that Paul wrapped himself in body condoms just a year ago. Oh, how time changes things, right? I have to tell you guys about Poshmark.com. You know me, I love a bargain, but I'm picky about quality and not wasting my time. I needed some new workout tops, so I went to Poshmark, searched the brands that I use and love like Nike, Adidas, Lululemon, and Zella, put in my size, and instantly I found the perfect Nike Racerback tank, a really cute Adidas sweatshirt dress, very Erica Jane, and even some Nike Juvenate shoes in my favorite olive green color. What I love about Poshmark is by using the free app, I can shop from millions of closets across America, even items new with tags. Women's, men's, children's items, even maternity. All my favorite brands are there. From Anthropologie, Old Navy, cut from the cloth jeans, which I love, Brooks running shoes and sports bras, even my favorite makeup like Tarte and Anastasia Beverly Hills. No excuse for a rocky eyebrow journey, ladies. Anastasia Brow Definer and Brow Wiz for only $18. That is more than half off what I used to pay. And it's not just for buying. You can sell your items too. Easy shipping both ways. Go to Poshmark.com and listeners of Reality TV get $5 off your first purchase. Go to Poshmark.com, enter referral code Reality TV. Again, that's referral code Reality TV. Check it out and let me know what you think. Lastly, we catch up with Tarek and Hazel. If you remember from last week, Hazel was running off because she was upset with Dean for basically just calling her on her lies. And Tarek now finds her in their Airbnb. He's trying to apologize and comfort her, but she's flinching at even the tiniest touch from Tarek. Come on, man. How do you not see this? Well, Tarek isn't that dumb. He does confront her. He slept out and he's like, something isn't right. Something Dean said did strike a nerve with her. So he confronts her and says, are you with your ex or not? And she says, well, I'm not with him, but I have been talking to him. She says the reason for it is because he still has some of her items, her bed, her clothes, and she wants it back. So Terika's like, okay, well, if that's all it is, I'll pay for all that shit. Don't worry about it. Just stop talking with him. But then Hazel says to her interpreter during their little interview sessions that she wants the money for it. She's going to keep talking to him until she gets the money. Well, we hear mention of money again as Hazel's hopping out of this little moped thing. And who is going to pay for that duck fetus she's slurping up? I'm guessing Tarek. I did have to leave the room altogether when this came on. I have a very weak stomach for that kind of stuff. I already saw it on An Idiot Abroad. You should too if you want to laugh your ass off. It's honestly the funniest show I've ever watched in my life. It's Idiot Abroad with Carl Pilkington. He ate a duck fetus egg thing or he watched someone eat it somewhere in China. I don't need to see it again. Carl and I have the same brain, same levels of disgust for people, so I knew I couldn't take watching it without throwing up. So please tell me what I missed if I missed anything. I was called back into the room when Dave said, hey, the guy's brother is wandering the streets with a towel. Do you need to see this part? Yeah, his name is Dean, Dave. Don't be rude. And while Dean was actually rude and he's hot, much like Angela was in Africa, because he's got a towel around his neck. And you know what? There is no shame in that. I need one too at the end of my workouts now. I'm getting a little older. The older I get, the more I sweat. And I really kind of think I'm starting to become like Weezer on Steel Magnolias. And I'm not hating it. It's kind of fun to be Weezer. And much like Weezer and myself, Dean is grumpy and he's easily convinced by others to bring out his bitchy side. Because I'll tell you what I think is happening. I think it's really obvious to see that production is just prodding Dean along. They want Dean to press the issue with Tarek. They're firing him up, telling him what they want him to see or what they want to see. They're telling him what to say. But I'm not going to let Dean off the hook completely. I think how he treats Hazel is despicable. I think the comments that he made about Hazel pleasing Tarek or are you ready for him in the bedroom, I thought it was disgusting. And even if producers are riling him up, convincing him to say certain things, what he is saying is not right. He's a grown guy. You know, would he want someone talking to his niece that way, right? Now, I'm hoping you noticed the same thing I did about their shirts. They're all wearing these shirts from some volcano they visited, which means they all must have went there together, right? Maybe I missed something when I left the room with the duck fetus scene, or maybe there's something in little clips or the More to Love bonus episode things. I don't know. I just feel like we're not seeing the whole Dean picture. Now, scenes for next week. Whoa, here go hell come. There's going to be a new couple. What the hell's going on? Angela is going to tell us whatever that secret of Michael's is. And then Jesse looks like he is going to pull possibly a Janelle from Teen Mom in the middle of traffic. Did you see that flinch and that jaw clench? Scary. Okay, after a quick break, let's get into some unexpected. Back again for another week in the spotlight, we have the kids from Unexpected. Let's start out with Chloe and Max. I cannot stand this kid, you guys. I know he's in jail because he stole from elderly folks, and that, on top of everything else that he shows us on the show, just make him the worst person, and it makes me feel horribly for Chloe and her family because I actually really like them. So let's start out with Chloe telling us how she feels so close to her grandma because they have a lot in common. She was also a teen mom, and her grandma also had a close relationship with her grandpa, just like she has with Max. No. The talk quickly turns to this baby shower. Now, Chloe's mom, Jessica, doesn't really want to have Max there because, let's face it, just like Ramona, let's face it, he's always around. He's always there. Jessica just wants Chloe to have this one thing for her. She can have Max over afterwards. He can look at all the gifts. But no, because Max wants to open presents because he says it's like Christmas and he wants to unwrap presents because he is a fucking toddler. I have to take sides on this one. Obviously, I am with Jessica. Chloe just wants everything her way, and I'm sorry. If you want to have a baby shower your way, then you pay for it and you throw it. But Jessica is paying for this thing. She is throwing it, so just go with it. If Max wants a baby shower so badly, then he can go ahead and throw one with all the money he says that he has, remember? I see Chloe's point of her wanting Max there, but sometimes you just can't have it your way. And Jessica's being awfully supportive of her daughter and her soon-to-be grandchild and the current relationship with Max. He's around all the time, so I just think Chloe needs to say thank you and leave it at that. But instead, Chloe calls Max, and Max says it doesn't matter what your mom thinks because it's not her baby, and she's just being fake and controlling. First of all, you know I think he's an idiot. And second of all, it does matter what her mom thinks because she, again, is the one throwing and paying for the baby shower. She isn't being fake. I think she's actually being quite honest. And as for controlling, that's what you get when you decide to have a baby with a 16-year-old who lives at home with their parents. That's just the way it is. Her parents are the same people who are going to give a roof over your child's head, who are feeding your girlfriend and are going to be feeding your child. Max just has it in his head that he's got it all figured out. It pisses me off that he thinks just because he's dating Chloe or having a baby with her, that her family automatically should just take him in and love him and make him part of the family. I don't believe that at all. I don't think they need to be hanging up a stocking for him at Christmas. I don't think they owe anything to Max. Would it be nice if they really liked his personality? Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen in their lifetime or with anyone that Max is with. Maybe he'll find his little family that he wants so badly in the clink now that he's in there for fraud and theft and being convicted for it, right? Now, I can only imagine what my mom would say when Max said, I almost didn't want to go into their house because I thought Jessica was going to make it awkward. Well, you know what? Don't go in the house then, you freaking wuss. I am totally with Chloe's stepdad that, I'm going to sound really old here, but this generation coming up is all about this. It's going to be awkward. I don't want to. Awkward. Hashtag awkward. You know what? My entire life is awkward. I mean, try walking around with the ears that are not level with one another and my sunglasses are always crooked on my face. And if you've ever seen pictures of me pre-Y2K, you'll know what awkward really is. I mean, really, kids, get some grit. You're going to need it. Life is awkward. Now, fast forward to the Lights Festival, and it's teen parent bonding time. Somehow between what the five of them, Jessica, oh no, and her husband, Chloe, Max, and the grandparents, six of them, none of them have realized that they were all teen parents before. Okay, I guess now we know why. Well, they go to this festival, they're looking at it as a new beginning, a fresh start. It actually looks like a really cool festival. They write messages on these lanterns and then they have a little Tangled moment where they light them up and they all fly away. I tried to think it was really beautiful, but then Max's face kept showing up and ruining it. Now let's talk about Lexis and Kelsey. Kelsey is coming in hot this episode, and I do not blame her. Neither Shaden nor Lexis have done even one thing that they said they were going to do when Lexis became pregnant. No jobs, no health insurance for their child that is almost a year old, and Lexis still doesn't even have her license. Now, on the way to finally get Lexis's license, Lexis casually turns to Kelsey and says, so you filled out all my paperwork, right? Totally forgot about that one. And then this little brat, I'm sorry, but she is, has the gall to be doing like the little talky hand thing next to Kelsey's head when she was talking in the little interview, and then yelling at her that she's stupid. Watching this immediately came to mind, oh my God, what would Carol have done? That's my mom, in case you don't know who Carol is. She is just the best, but she's also no bullshit. I'm going to tell you what she would have done. She would have pulled that car right over, told me to get my ungrateful, snotty ass out of the car, and told me to figure out a way to get home on my own. And that probably would have been followed with a call out the window like, why don't you go ask your friends to help you get your license? I mean, my God, I still fear my mom at 38 years old. I should actually have her watch one of these episodes of Unexpected. Okay, she'll probably be absolutely livid and lose her goddamn mind. Oh my God. Okay, I'm going to mark that down. She's going to watch an episode of Unexpected for Patreon. She watched The Housewives and that was comical, but I think this one will fire her up. All right, well, let's get back to Lexis and Kelsey. They go to this licensed facility and they tell Lexis right as they're about to take her picture, Oh no, you can't get your license after all. You still need 6 more hours with the driving instructor. Now this took me back too, because how the hell does Lexis not know that she needed that? I have nieces and nephews of driving age. They've all done this shit, and they could tell you down to the minute how many hours they need or how many hours they already have. That's basic knowledge. And I do not fall for this, like, oh, I don't like that my mom says that she wants custody of Scarlett because I cried about it. I literally bawled my eyes out. Guess what? Kelsey would probably be crying too if she had time, but she's busy working to keep you and your 10-month-old daughter insured and the lights on in your house and the gas in the car that you're learning how to drive and buying your eyeliner that you're drawn all over your face. She doesn't have time to crawl in her bed and bawl over something so freaking stupid. I mean, even for 15 and 16 years old, yes, that's young, but Lexis really is choosing to be clueless about life. I mean, just because you're upset about something and you're crying doesn't mean everyone around you has to do what you want. I can't stand that I'm going to cry to get my way stuff. I mean, this is a classic Carol moment. Life's not fair. Get used to it. And now that I get older, I understand it and it comes in handy. Now let's talk about Emily and Diego. I'm going to try not to get the giggles again this week. Or maybe I should just get them out right now. So Anne in the Facebook group, after listening to last week's episode, photoshopped a picture of Diego's head on one of those little slinky little things, little contraption things. Oh my God. Okay. Oh, getting it out. All right. Diego, okay, he collapses, he's back up, collapses, he's back up. But Emily is barely still standing up because she's 39 weeks pregnant and she's having lower back pain. She doesn't think she's in labor, but her mom and her grandma are like, yeah, we're heading to the hospital just to be on the safe side. And of course, Diego thinks it's all bullshit. You know, he's no guru, but sometimes there's just people you hate, like flies on poop, that make people get medical intervention when they're in pain and they're unsure. Fucking Diego. He really is. I mean, I used to think Shaden was the worst, but I think Diego is tied right up there with Max, but I think Diego definitely takes the cocoa collapsible cake. Now, it ends up being a false alarm. Emily goes in, you know, they're like, it's Brecton and Hicks. They send her home. But 20 minutes later in the car, pop, Emily's water breaks and it's pedal to the metal back to the hospital. I really did enjoy her grandma in that scene. I really think I can spend some time with her. She is my kind of lady, that Nana. No scenes with Tyler and Laura this week, so let's check in lastly with Michaela. Just a little reminder that Michaela decided not to move in with her mom, Shannon, last week. So now Shannon is upset at Michaela and everyone else, because Michaela led her to believe they'd be splitting some of the bills and or rent. I mean, really, $500, that's not bills, that's rent. So now Shannon cannot afford the place that she rented without Michaela's contribution. Michaela is kind of playing victim, as she typically does, because Shannon sent her a text and Michaela's feelings are hurt. So now Shannon shows up with her other kids at Tim and Cindy's house, and she wants to know why Michaela changed her mind. Instead of Michaela answering, Cindy jumps in and responds with, well, I told you to only rent a place that you can afford without Michaela's money. Shannon's argument here doesn't stand on its own feet, because she replies that she wanted to be Michaela's mom finally, but Tim and Cindy won't let her. Well, if you want to be her mom and that's what it's about, don't go charging Michaela $500 for the pleasure of having you around. That is such bullshit. She's just being totally dishonest. Shannon wants to keep putting on Michaela that it's her fault that she rented the place. But again, if you were a good mom and that's what it's about, Shannon would have been looking out for Michaela's interest. She wouldn't be backing her into a corner and put that kind of a responsibility on a 17-year-old. So Shannon is just screeching and yelling on the couch. Kaylin comes downstairs, takes Timmy out of there because, of course, we all know kids and babies should not be around yelling adults ever. Well, then I look at Shannon's baby sitting in her lap, and honestly, it broke my heart. Shannon is yelling so loudly, it hurt my ears. I had to turn the volume down, yet her baby isn't even flinching. It really was alarming. I mean, I know my kids would have been flailing and moving and crying and squirming if I was just sitting there yelling and crying too. I mean, kids and babies pick up on that stuff, but Shannon's baby just must be so used to it. It's just like white noise. It's just super, super sad to watch. Also sad to watch was how easily Shannon threw her dad, Tim, under the bus. Remember, this is the man who picked up Shannon Slack and raised her two kids. Yes, yeah, she's not happy with him now, but the guy put his life on hold to raise her kids. And she is saying, well, he never hurt anyone with the beer he liked to drink. But, you know, they say in rehab that a drink's a drink and a drug is a drug. So, I mean, alluding to the fact that her dad, Tim, is an alcoholic. That is such bullshit. She herself, as an addict, should know what that feels like when someone is pointing their finger, telling you that you're addicted to something if you're not. She was all fired up about that last season because she's clean now, so why would she do that to someone else? Okay, so Tim makes a really good point. She's yelling, she's screaming. He just says, like, okay, stop. Let me just ask you this. Do you really think Michaela and her son Timmy are better off living with you? And Shannon, without skipping a beat, she really didn't even stop to think about it, says yes, but she couldn't answer why to Tim. Why would it be better for your grandson and your daughter to be living in a cold, dog shit infested basement with wires hanging down as opposed to the warm home that you're very comfortably sitting in right now? It wasn't until after the fact that she had a minute to think of an excuse that she came up with that little alcoholic allegation. I just don't buy it. I don't buy anything coming out of Shannon's mouth making her sound like a victim. I mean, if you're taking $500 as a down payment from your own daughter and then she says, I know I'm never going to get it back, pretty much confirms that you're an untrustworthy person. I mean, your tears don't mean much when you're crying time after time after time over stuff like this. You just lose credibility. And the guilt trip stuff that Shannon puts on Michaela, I'll be honest, it's very triggering to me. You just don't guilt trip your kids, even if they're 17, 18 years old. You just don't do it. Now, I'll tell you something that you should do, and that is stick around because right after the jump, we'll catch up with Married at First Sight. We've made it to day 32 on Married at First Sight. Yep, it's a team effort. Although this week's episode was slightly more interesting than last week's. Dr. Pepper is here to counsel all the couples now that they're halfway through. First, we go to Bobby's and Danielle's, and I feel like I've bitten my tongue long enough on this. I've touched on Danielle's brows, but I have to tell you, I cannot take them anymore. She should know better. She's got to lighten them up a few shades. I know she did at some point. I'm hoping it's more current day brow because in one of the interviews, they are much lighter. They're more of a true frame to her eye, whereas most of the season, they have been a blackout drape to her eyes. Okay, well, Dr. Pepper wants to find out what each of them has learned so far in the relationship. And Danielle really is the only one that says that she's learned something and bettered herself. And it's that she's more affectionate. Well, actually, I take that back. It's not that she's more affectionate. She's more open to receiving affection from Bobby. Well, this makes Pepper think a little bit. And she thinks they may be open to exploring tantric sex simulations on national TV. Yeah, totally natural transition, right? But uh-oh, what's that? What's that we hear? Lassie, is that you? Bobby's golf shirt in the well on fire? Well, almost. Or I wish. It's actually a foster dog that Danielle picked up. Now, I've said this before, but I know for a fact the universe is now speaking to me, rather screaming at me not to listen to my inner voice that really wants to get a dog. I definitely have puppy fever. But the second Bobby started talking about cleaning up puppy diarrhea and being up all hours of the night and all day picking up the shit, I was like, okay, maybe Oprah was right. The universe is whispering my name. And all I kept thinking about was that one Oprah episode where she had the big luncheon and they're all saying to each other, "We speak your name." Okay, universe, I get it. Jody is not ready for a dog. But no worries on the Danielle and diarrhea front because Bobby is loving it. He can't get enough of scooping up this shit for her. Now then we get to a little phone swap experiment. And just in case you ever find Bobby and Danielle's phone, Bobby's passcode is 4121 and Danielle's is 3350. Nice bleeping job, Lifetime. Maybe it would have helped to put a little blurry thing over their mouth or not shown them at all when you're doing it. I could have been a little off, but I didn't want to go back and really deep dive into their passcodes, number one, because I don't really care that well. And number two, there was something more important to look at, and that was Danielle's eyebrows. Once again, if you actually still have it on your DVR, if you recorded it, go to minute 20, 49 seconds in, and you can see that Danielle's eyebrow pencil is smeared up her forehead. Bless her sweet little heart. But they're both pretty lame in this experiment. They both have pictures of dogs, and Bobby uses his camera app a lot. We did get to see Bobby in his short shorts, though, so sweet dreams with that image in your head. Now, what? You want more sweet dreams, like that kind of dream? Well, wait no longer, because we're going to talk about this Tantra yoga session. As much as these two little prissy prudes bug me for whatever reason, I don't know if I'm the only one who finds Bobby just infuriating for some reason, but I am with these two on this one. It is just so wrong for Dr. Pepper or the producers, whoever it was, to have these two go and talk to a stranger about sex and orgasms in front of millions of people. I can barely say it myself. They don't want to talk about it. I don't want to hear about it. And no one needs to know what Bobby's happy place is. Ugh. Now let's talk about Amber and Dave. Dave thinks Amber has strong reactions to little things. And Amber, surprisingly, without losing her temper, agrees with him. She wants all her socks when she wants her socks. She shares all of her emotions and feels all of the feelings all of the time, and Dave just doesn't understand that. He says something about not choosing your wife and not getting to choose her crazy, and he doesn't understand how to deal with Amber's crazy. I think it was a really bad choice of words, but I think he actually meant well, and I understand what he's saying. Like, you don't get to pick and choose the little quirks that your partner has. Now, Amber being an emotional person means that she's always going to feel on guard and judged by Dave because he keeps most of his emotions inside. She uses this word annoying about herself quite a bit, maybe because she is annoying and probably because she's been told that quite often by other people. I have to say, as much as I love Dr. Pepper, I think out of all the experts, so-called experts, she gives the best advice, the most reasonable. They can be a little far-fetched, but she's the most with it out of all three. However, I totally disagree with her advice to Dave and Amber. She recommended that when Dave gets upset or frustrated with Amber's mood swings or when she's being emotional, that he should just tell her that he's too upset to say things in a calm way right now, but he'll get back to her at such and such a time. That's going to go over real well for someone who is insecure. Your partner telling you that they're pissed at you, but they're not going to want to talk to you right now? No, I think that sounds good in theory. I do. But I will be completely honest with you. that would make me even more emotional and more upset during whether it's like 2 or 3 or 4 hour period where my partner isn't talking to me. No, because then it's just going to be hashtag time's up. And now the partner's all level headed, they've cooled down. But meanwhile, I would be a pressure cooker about to burst with anxiety because for hours, I've been wondering what upset him so much. Maybe it's just me. I just think for a person that has a tendency to become insecure in an argument, that's going to make it exponentially worse. Now, phone swap time for Dave and Amber. Dave doesn't have any desire to see Amber's phone, and Amber even surprises herself with her lack of desire. Normally, she would have been a little stalkerazzi, which I can totally see in her, but this time, she seems relaxed. She's all good with it. Again, I say for now, because once a stalker, always a stalker, I would know. Now, I also know that Amber was wearing an Invisalign or some sort of mouth guard on her bottom teeth. You know I have an eye for orthodontia, and to that I say, that a girl, you do you. I myself wear a clear top retainer and a bottom mouth guard every single night, so I understand what it takes to be so sexy. Jealous. Sorry, my whole family makes fun of me because I lisp in my mouth guard and my retainer, but guess who's got the best teeth in the family? But just as Amber is feeling good about the status of her teeth and their relationship and trust level, Dave levels an unexpected blow. He says he finds it concerning, a little strange, and not at all good about himself or Amber that she's been drawn to the wrong types of guys in her past. Either they've cheated or she's chosen guys that are just not into long-term relationships. Amber does have a very valid point in this about Dave being judgy and making comments that come off as condescending and I think superior. He does have a tendency to state very strong opinions and then he'll follow it up with, he said something to Amber and he followed it up with like, oh, but that's all right. That's just who you are. Well, gee, that's going to make someone feel a whole lot better. But in a strange way, I think it actually makes Dave feel better because then he feels better than or higher up in the relationship. Kind of the Bethany Frankel, Kelly Ben Simone thing, right? And on top of all that, then he can feel like he's the one who's smart enough to be the fixer. He's going to fix the one who's wounded or less than him. Okay, Mia and Tristan. Has anyone actually come around to liking Mia? Because I certainly am not there yet. Dr. Pepper shows up at their apartment, greeted by Tristan, who it appears he's like grown 2 feet, or maybe Mia is shrunken down to like Lilliputian proportions. And also, she's wearing this royal blue tent, one she can burrow herself into or tuck herself into like a little turtle when she starts squirming her way, like her special little, oh, I'm just little and twee, don't look at me. Okay, yeah, I'm being mean, I know, but Dr. Pepper, on the other hand, is just full of joy today because she's seeing these two and she says, last she heard, they're not in the middle of a crisis, so yay, the experts hit it out of the park. High five. No, I don't think so. But Tristan is into her. I don't get it. I don't see what Tristan is seeing. I know we only see so much, but Mia's personality just seems so blah. Maybe Tristan is just that attracted to her physically that he's willing to overlook like all the clingy yet ho-hummy attitude. I mean, she did kind of climb over him at the end of the episode. Did you see that? It was like a little suggestive. You know what I'm talking about? Well, their phone swap was super stupid. I think they had a whole 30 seconds. Neither of them wanted to do it, and that was it. Let's jump to the triple date, and I had a little thrill. Finally, in the episode, my heart went a little pitter-patter because it was Trey from Top Chef. Yes, loved him on Top Chef. There was a lot of buildup and letdown with this cooking thing, though, because we thought that Amber was going to have a meltdown, and then we thought that there was going to be some sort of fire. But the real takeaway for me was seeing, what's the word I'm looking for? The contrast, the juxtaposition of Amber's eyebrows next to Danielle's eyebrows. And it got me thinking that if we just added them together to make an average and then split them equally, it would be the most perfect algebraic, geometric, symmetrical math equation that has ever been seen. Now jump ahead quickly past the most boring date I have never been on, where Bobby was talking about cleaning up poop. We probably should have had a little bingo card, how many times they said poop, puppy poop, diarrhea. It was out of control. We did get a little, you know, oh, I love you, Danielle scene, and then she didn't respond. We'll touch on that in just a bit. But more interesting was the discussion over wine at Amber and Dave's. Amber is all aboard the baby train, and she is pulling, you know, the Marissa Tomei, my biological clock is ticking like this. But Dave is suddenly slowing his roll. He thinks they should travel, wait a few years, 40 is the new 30. And right away, I was thinking, oh, this guy's changed his mind. He is having doubts about her. Then he took this flippant comment Amber made about not being super excited about the baby stage because it's all hard work and she just can't wait until they're 5. Which coincidentally, ages 4 and 5 is my favorite. I could keep them at that age forever if I had superpowers. And as much as Amber can bother me and she bugs me with her whining and her insecurities, I do think she was just making a joke about fast-forwarding to age 5. Think about it. If she is the one who is pushing to have a baby and a family, going so far as getting married to a stranger on TV who said he wanted the same, she's not gonna be sending her baby away to like baby boarding school or some shit. Dave took a page right out of Ryan's playbook from last season. If you remember, Ryan was talking about Jackie. He went back to the guys and he said, Jackie said she wanted to travel and she had wanderlust or she was a gypsy soul, something along those lines. And Ryan took that to mean Jackie wanted to abandon her children and go into witness protection. Dave is pretty much making assumptions along those same lines. But here's what I think the subtext of what he's saying is, what he's actually trying to say. He thinks Amber's lazy. He's alluded to it so many times. She doesn't do a whole lot around the house. You know, adding a baby in is going to be a lot more work, and she's already whining about being tired all the time. He's thinking to himself, oh shit, it looks like I'm going to be the one doing most of the work. And long story short, he already has resentment. We see it. And that resentment has already grown exponentially with the hypothetical babies Amber has birthed and left crying in dirty diapers and spilled Cheerios on the floor. I mean, Dave's imagination and his picture of what Amber is going to do, I don't think it's that fair to her. And again, she drives me nuts. Now, next week, Tristan breaks down in therapy. Amber thinks Dave wants to sleep with her Zumba class. And Dr. Jessica appears to be fighting back tears as she's scolding Danielle about not responding to Bobby's declarations of love. Speaking of Dr. Jessica, I don't remember if I mentioned this. If I did, I apologize, but it is official that she is dating John from last season. Now, the best part about this are the quotes Dr. Jessica is posting on Instagram. Hands down, the funniest threads that I cannot stop thinking of. I've gone back several times. I'm laughing about it, just thinking about it, are in the Orchard of Snark Facebook group. Okay, so you see, Jessica started posting these quotes that are not her original quotes, not original thoughts, but she's adding dash Dr. Jessica and putting quotes around them. For example, here's one from her Instagram. If they can't love you at your worst, they don't deserve you at your best. Dash Dr. Jessica. Another one. Without darkness, we cannot see the stars. Dr. Jessica. So over in our Facebook group, there are over 100 quotes that everyone started spoofing about Dr. Jessica. Some of them were like, you only live once, Dr. Jessica. To be or not to be, Dr. Jessica. Live, laugh, love, Dr. Jessica. I mean, they're fucking hilarious. So if you're in the Facebook group, I highly suggest just search Jessica, you know, like you're searching for a post, and you will see the thread. Bravo. Amazing work, everyone. Well, on that note, thank you for tuning in. Remember to subscribe, share, tell a friend, leave a 5-star review, and talk to me. Check out that Facebook group, Instagram, and Twitter. Search Reality TV Pod. You will find me there. And until next week, stay salty.